Okay. Ready? Oh, no problem. Okay, are we ready? All righty. Today, we are a week or so into the month of Elul. Today, we are going to do an in-depth analysis of the Kapitel Chaf Zayin that we say from Rosh Chodesh Elul until pretty much end of Sukkos. And that is L'Davar Hashem Ori V'Yishi. Now, our objective today, of course, is to understand the flow of the perek. It's really a perek that is interesting because it's written later on in David's life, but it refers back to earlier events in his life and earlier understandings that David already cultivated, before he became king and before all the various differing situations that he had to deal with came to confront him. But before we start to understand L'Davar Hashem Ori V'Yishi and why it's recited in Elul in particular, and there's a reference, by the way, there's a little hint to Elul in the kapitel. Towards the end it says, Lule Hamanti, Lule Lamed Vav Lamed Aleph, which is backwards for Elul. But we'll get to there. But in any case, first what I need to clarify, because we just have to make sure we all have this very, very organized in our heads, is what role does David play? And I know it's a simplistic question, but we had many great leaders, and among all our great leaders, there were three that stand out as pivotal. They played pivotal roles. You know, the name Adam, man, ultimately man, the Tzelem Elokim. Adam is an acronym for Avram, David, and Moshe. Now, those are the three main players. Our question is, how do you define each one's individual role? Avram is not just Avram. Avram is Avram and Sarah and the Avos and the Mos. Moshe is Moshe and David is David. What was different between them? What role did they play? It's a very straightforward question, and yet sometimes we're not quite sure how to define each of their individual roles. So let me just ask you, the Avos, what did they do? Avraham and Sarah, what did they do? Well, they spread, but primary to that. Establish what? Monotheism. But what they didn't just bring an abstract theory of one God to the world. What did they bring to the world? What did they want from the world? What were they trying to change in the world? What awareness were they trying to cultivate in people's minds and hearts? Emuna, but develop that a little more. Emuna is a good word, but there's a more precise word. Devotion, bitachon. There's one word. Relationship. Okay. The word, and we have spoken about this. I hope this jogs your memory, but now we're going to put a whole bunch of ideas that we've worked with in the past together. And hopefully, you know, the concept expands as we work with familiar ideas, but we see new nuances in them. If you want to know why Hashem created this world, what did Hashem want from this world, what does God want from this Bria, from the whole enterprise, there is a single word that explains all of it. And the word is? What's it in Hebrew? Chibur. That's the word, right? We've talked about Chibur. Ches beis resh, chibor, an attachment. How do you know that what Hashem wants is an attachment? Because it's everywhere. Because Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti besocham. Make for me a place and I will dwell among you. We talk about that when Hashem created the world, Shechina was here, betachtonim, in the physical world, but with the sin and with the numerous generations until Avram, it retreated. Avram, starting up till Moshe, brought it back down to the world. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. Vayal Moshe el ha'elokim. Attachment, chibor. Everything is a chibor, an attachment between Ruchnius and Gashmius. Between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Hashem wants. The job of the Avos, Avram and Sarah, are examples of the people, the two people that came to this world with a clear, deep understanding that that's the whole thing, and they tried to teach and convey to everybody that that's what's driving man. The man may not know what he's seeking, but what man is seeking is an attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if you don't know that that's what you're seeking, you know you're seeking something, and it comes out in all kinds of weird permutations. But what man is driving at is chibur. Now, let's go back one step. If it's true, this is an interesting, fascinating observation, and once we recognize it, you'll see it in many, many things. You can all give me your own examples of this, because there's endless examples. If chibur is the purpose of the world, the force that brought this world into being, the ritzon, the will, the ratzon, if that's the will that drives this world forward, then you should expect to see the force of chibur everywhere in the Bria, in the creation. And you do. It starts with this. We talked about this. The four basic rules of physics that govern the universe are all, at their core, chibur. They are gravity, electromagnetivity, and the strong and weak nuclear forces. Now, I'm not a physicist, and I don't pretend to be, but we all know that the gravitational pull holding those electrons and the neutrons and the protons, you know, together and spinning and the force that keeps them, you know, focused, attached to the center. We understand that force as an attachment. Go try to split the chibur, the attachment, in one atom. It takes millions of dollars to build a centrifuge, and it's as big as a shul, or bigger, just to split an atom. And the energy you release can destroy the whole country. The chibur, the force of chibur, is everywhere, correct? It's the same force that keeps little atoms in motion and huge galaxies in motion. It's not just in the physical forces that govern the world. It's in nature. We were just in Yosemite. So we were taught there, which I've heard, you know, it's interesting, that, you know, Smokey Bear, they thought that they were helping out the ecology of the world by stopping forest fires, until they discovered that it's the fire itself, fire, that is able to clear the brush, that's able to melt the pitch and the tar that's on the pine cones that are holding the seeds, and the seeds will not germinate and make new trees unless the fire melts the tar and the pitch and releases the seeds. So you must have fire. Interestingly enough, by the way, just a side point, when we were there, we saw the giant sequoias. This is just a tangent.
In Mariposa.
And we saw the giant sequoias. The largest, by the way, the sequoia is the largest living creature, so to speak, on this planet. The largest one is in California. It's about 460 feet tall or more, about 468, I think, something like that. It's huge. Why did the sequoia, what gave it its length, its lifespan? What made it impervious to fungus and blight and disease and fire? It's a very thick, rubbery bark, okay? Interestingly enough, the chemical in the bark of the sequoia that allows it to survive and grow to be so large and gives us its reddish color is called tannin. I don't know if there's any connection, but the largest of the sea creatures is Taninim Hagadolim also. I don't know where the word tannin comes from. I don't know its etymology, but it was interesting. But interestingly enough, there's also growing in all over Yosemite the sugar pine. The sugar pine's a regular pine. It's tall. It can grow 100 feet tall, maybe 150 feet tall. It doesn't grow 450 feet tall. We saw two pine cones, right? We saw the sugar cone's pine cone, which is about this big, and the sequoia's pine cone, which is like this big, okay? It's tiny. Anyway, the point here is that in nature itself, you've watched the Animal Planet or whatever they have, or the Discovery or National Geographic. You've read those things, how interesting, different, random, or what we would think is disconnected forces or elements of the natural world interact and must interact. There's a tree, there's a few trees in the jungles in Africa whose seeds will not germinate if they fall on dirt, no matter how fertile the dirt is. They will only germinate if they're eaten by elephants. The fruit is eaten by elephants. digested and excreted, then they'll germinate. So the tree needs the elephant. So there is a chibur in all of nature. And that's a science in and of itself. We know that, right? And in addition to that, that force of chibur, of attachment of one thing to the next, of everything being connected, we feel it inside ourselves. Choni Amagol said after waking up after 70 years, O chavrusa chibur, chaver, O misusa, our death. In other words, a human being must find an attachment to another person. Right, we crave to attachment. That's why there's marriage, and that's why there's love. And you've seen or heard or read, you can't escape it in our culture, endless films, music, books, all devoted to this, like this theme that no one seems to ever get bored of, which is a person who's got everything or whatever and willing to sabotage or leave or destroy or break apart everything they've ever built, everything they've ever known, and travel to the ends of the earth and give up everything for that one true love, right? Because chibur is, we crave it. We must have it. We make a chibur with our family. We make a chibur with our children. We make a chibur with our community, our society. We are craving it. However, to make a chibur takes hard work. And we've spoken about this too. Today, this end of the gullus, which as we once talked about, is described as the two legs of the statue that Daniel saw, remember? One leg being Edom, and one leg being Yishmael. And these two legs, these partners in the last gullus, have the same agenda. The agenda is, as you would well expect it to be, that if what Hashem wants from this world, what the Avos started, what they brought to this world, the message they gave is that all Hashem wants is a chibur. As we get closer and closer to David, Mashiach, okay, you're going to see the forces, the negative forces, in other words, working their hardest to destroy any possibility for chibur with Hashem. How is that going to manifest itself? You have Edom. That's, thank God, Christendom is dying. We've suffered enough from it. And yet, what was their doctrine? What was their stated philosophy? That the Jews have been rejected, as proof is the Chorban and their miserable situation in exile, which the Christians obviously implemented in order to use it as a proof. And that has proven that we have been rejected. We have no chibur, attachment to Hashem. They have replaced us. They are Israel, and they hold the chibur. That was their stated doctrine. Now, they have no more power anymore. Thank God, not to control, certainly not to govern. Yishmael is just another permutation of the same type of attack on chibur. Because remember, we brought that, Meir Shapiro brings this idea. Does it sound familiar a little bit? A little? Right? He says that Yishmael is identified by Zanus. And we wonder, why Zanus? Everybody's, you know, the whole world today is consumed with Zanus, and they don't seem more than others. In fact, they seem less. They seem more controlled with the burkas and the whole thing, right? Now, let's just be careful. Zanus is not arayas. Zanus is not forbidden relationships. Zanus is permitted relationships, but unconsecrated. No chuppah, no kedusha, no ksuva. In other words, no commitment, no attachment, zero. How do you know that this is Yishmael? Very interesting, because they're the only religion in the history of the world that we know of anyway, that conceived of their Olam Haba as Zanus, worth living for and worth dying for, right? The 72 virgins. They're not having Chuppah and Kedushin 72 times, right? It's Zanus. It's just what this is the fact that people at the end of the Golus, what they want, what they're craving is a real attachment. But that takes work and discipline. And there's a much easier, immediate substitute, artificial way to get the momentary thrill of an attachment without ever having to build a real attachment, and that's called Zanus. Zanus is an artificial substitute. It's a moment of chibur, but it's not real chibur. And it's not just Zanus, which permeates this our time period, which is everywhere, but lack of attachment, rootedlessness in every place. Nobody sticks with a job. Nobody sticks in the same city. Everybody's on the move. Families don't stay together. Siblings don't stay together. Spouses don't stay together. Not everybody's moving, rooted. No chibur. No attachment. The end of days, the avoda of this last generation is to finish what the avos began, which is that what ultimately what we need and what we crave, because the other way is very, very painful. Why is half the country on antidepressants? Probably much more than half. Why are people drowning themselves in distraction? There is so much misery. There is so much pain because of this. This is the defining aspect of this last, you know, the last patch before David HaMelech, before Mashiach, is the lack of chibur. And what Avram and Sarah tried to bring to the world back then, and then what Moshe Rabbeinu, what's Moshe's job? He's not the founder. He doesn't bring to the world the concept of chibur. He teaches Torah how to achieve it in day-to-day life. But Avram and Sarah presented the concept, invested the world with this understanding that that's what we want. Now, how do you see it in both Avram and Sarah in pivotal, you know, expressed in like main facets of their existence? Avram got the bris milah. The bris milah is a sign on the body, right? The organ of a man that's most susceptible to forgetting that there's a chibur between the physical and the spiritual. It could be lost. It could live a life of its own. It could indulge itself in pure instant gratification, satisfaction, etc. Completely forget that it's meant to be an attachment. That has a bris, a simen on it. That everything is in a chibur. A bris is a covenant. It's a covenant between two people. It is a chibur. It is a connection. It's an attachment. That's what a bris is. And that's Avram. And by the way, we've spoken about this too in past times. The union between a man and a woman, that chibur, that attachment, is the reason Hashem has set up the life like that, that's what we must have, and that's how we bear children, and that's what everybody wants, is because it's there as a mashal to teach us the concept of a chibur between two people. And Avram and Yitzchak, and then Yaakov taught us, and we'll get to Sarah in a minute, that in order to create a chibur, there are two main forces at play that have to harmonize. In order to have an attachment, you have to utilize both drives that a person has within themselves. One is the drive which we call ase, to do. It's associated with ahava, love, to reach out, to expand, to express, to contribute, to do, to give, to do something that is physically in the world that demonstrates your desire for a chibur, or mitzvah ase, the aspect of ava and chesed. That's Avram. But Yitzchak also taught us that to maintain a chibur, an attachment, there has to be restraint and gevura and discipline and holding back. You do not do things that annoy the person, that betray the person, that destroy the trust with the person, that make the person mistrust you, right? That things that harm or offend the person, there's restraint. That's gevura. That's all the mitzvahs lo sase. That's what we call din or yira. Okay, and Yaakov taught us the combination between the two is pure truth, is emes, is harmony, is tiferes, it's beauty, is the combination. So the avos bring us this, okay? Sarah, Avram had a bris. What was Sarah, what is the ultimate testimony to Sarah's investment of the world, her single-minded attachment to this concept of chibur? You say it in Eishes Chayil. Zamama sodea v'tikachea. What does that mean? She prepared her field, and she acquired it. What is Eishes Chayil referring to? Anyone know? Medrash says she prepared her field. Zamama sadeha v'tikacha. She selected Maris HaMachpelah in Chevron for the burial place. Now, Chevron, Chibur. Everybody knows, if you know a little bit of Chevron, and right, and Chevron is the place where Shamayim va'aretz come together. It is a mystical city, Chibur. Okay, it is where our tefillos go through Chevron up to Shamayim, they say. Okay, it's a lot of mystical stuff about Chevron. Sarah's life was a Chibur between this world and the next world. The Nisim in her tent were the Nisim that would eventually show themselves again in the Beis HaMikdash, where Hashem dwelled here in this world, so to speak. Okay, so that's clear that the Avos established the notion of Chibur, and the Mahos in all its different permutations, and it's the essential drive. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to teach us how to implement that in day-to-day life. What is David's role? And why is he the father of Mashiach? Why does he hold the seeds of Mashiach? We know what we're driving at. We know how we're supposed to implement it. And now what? Right? You kind of know this. I know you all know this, but it's a little amorphous to articulate. David HaMelech shows us, and this kapitel is a prime example, a classic example, one of the most beautiful examples, that David HaMelech shows us that through all the endless ups and downs of his vicissitudes of life, the trials and tribulations, the highs and the lows, all we want is chibur and holding on to Torah and mitzvahs despite whatever is going on is the only way to maintain it. That's David. And David HaMelech experienced every single thing that anybody ever experienced. You talk about the greatness, lahavdil elef habdalos, that Shakespeare understood every human emotion and was able to convey it. David HaMelech in Sefer Tehillim not just understood, he lived everything that anyone ever lived. Let's go through it. He lived through his early years, rejection and abandonment, which he says in this kapitel, Avi ve'imi yazvuni, my parents have abandoned me. He was rejected, he was disgraced, he was considered to be an illegitimate child in the early parts of his life. He filled that void with what? One thing, a chibur HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. A total emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was pure. Pure in that, and we'll see in the kapitel that he testifies to his purity in those days. That all he wanted was a chibur HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he became an instant hero with the story with Goliath. After he was crowned privately, anointed privately, but no one yet knew about it. Then came the Goliath incident, which he refers to again in this capitol. And that was the beginning of his heyday. He was an instant hero. He was worshipped. He rose to the top, and he dealt with power and importance and adoration, which is another huge challenge. And then he became a refugee and a fugitive, running for his life. And then he had to disgrace himself, hiding with his enemies by the Plishtim, acting like a homeless, deranged person so they shouldn't recognize him as the warrior who just defeated them. Okay, he was a fugitive and a refugee. And then his own wife didn't appreciate him. She scolded him for dancing in front of the Aron. And then he dealt with temptation, with the Bathsheba incident, which of course you know the Gemara says was a huge sin, but it was not Gilui Arayos, and it was not adultery, but it was nevertheless a huge sin. And he dealt with repenting, with doing tshuva, and he lost a child. And then he dealt with rebellion from his own ranks, from his own child, Avshalom, who rebelled against him. And then he dealt with weakness and illness. And he dealt with, again, on the high side of vanquishing all his enemies and creating security on all the borders and building the base and wanting to build the Beis HaMikdash, setting up the stage so he could build the Beis HaMikdash. And then he dealt with facing that he made huge mistakes, that he counted the people and then there was a plague and people died because of him. And he went through pretty much everything that anybody can go through. And through it all, David HaMelech knew perfectly clear that if not for his single-minded desire to maintain a chibur with Hashem above all things, that he was lost. And the only thing that kept him grounded was his constant desire to just be engaged in Torah mitzvah, despite whatever he was doing. Okay? So this is what David's talking about. So if you look at Kapitel Chav Zayin, really there are two parts to the Tehillim. There's Pasuk Aleph, pretty much to Pasuk Hey. And then there's the end of the second half. There's two halves. David HaMelech, it seems to be, is writing this much later in life, towards the end, but he's referring back to the beginning. And what he's saying here, he's requesting. And we spoke about what he's saying a little bit last week, but now we're going to flesh it out. The fulcrum that this kapitel rests on, turns on, okay, is pasuk dalet. Acha sha'alti mi'eis Hashem, right? Remember what we said about this last week? David is saying, acha sha'alti, once, remember we went into this, we spent time on this already, once I had something, once I lived in a certain state of mind, it was mine, but I obviously didn't own it because I don't have it anymore. I don't feel like I'm there anymore. I feel like I must have borrowed it. It must have been something on loan to me temporarily because I don't feel like I truly have it now. And what is an osav avakesh? That's what I'm seeking to find. Remember we said that the word mivakesh means to find something you've lost that you used to have. He says, I once had something and I'm seeking it, and that is what? Shivti beveis Hashem kol yimecheh, that I wanted in purity and sweetness and innocence just one thing, and that was to dwell in the house of Hashem, which means to be, that would be my makom. That would be my chibur, what I'm attached to. And what happened? What happened that so much came into my life? So much was thrown upon me. And sometimes because things are thrown upon you, you begin to get attached to other things, to power, to importance, to authority, to depression, to people that you think you need. So many things you begin to attach to, and you forget that your real desire is only one chibur, and that's the only chibur, and everything else is just a tool to help you build that real chibur. And he says, and all I wanted was shifti b'veish Hashem, Lachsos, to see and understand the sweetness of Hashem. We'll go back to these words in more depth, and to be in the Heichal, to constantly be able to come to the place where they were give karbanos. Now, look what David's saying. He starts out by saying, David, Hashem ori v'yishi mimi ira. Hashem is my light and my Yeshua, so who should I be afraid of? David HaMelech says, and Hirsch brings this down, I let Hashem guide me, and I derive my awareness of Hashem only from Hashem. This is important. When he was sitting there all those days, because he's talking about his early life now, when he was sitting there all those days shepherding, what is he thinking about? What is he filling the void of abandonment and rejection with? Hirsch explains that the problem is that people feel, people who derive their view of a Kadosh Baruch Hu from their own attitudes and their own preconceived notions and their own principles of their own mind. So then they're afraid, because if somebody's smarter than me or sharper than me or more cunning than me, then I'm afraid of that person. But if I derive my wisdom and my understanding of the way the world works only from Hashem, I have nobody, no matter how smart or strong someone else is, if in Hashem's eyes they're unworthy, I have nothing to fear. So David has immediately says, I only got my light, my understanding, my sense of this salvation only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I put myself aside, and his name, David, Dalid, represents Dal, poor, pauper. The Dalid at the end, Dal, in between is the Vav HaChibur. Vav is a hook, Chibur, connection. He felt himself unworthy, having no natural power or value other than his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he filled it all with truth. And the Vilna Gaon says, by the way, when we talk about Devekus Bashem, clinging or connecting to Hashem, he says it only takes place in the Seichel, can't obviously take place physically, takes place only in the mind. And the way to get that is to rid oneself in their learning and in their day-to-day activities of their subjectivity, of the way they see things, of the way they would like things to be. Try to be objective and hear what the Torah is saying. Hear clearly what Hashem wants, and then Hashem will invest that person with true understanding. If we remove our own preconceived notions, our own, you know, the way we'd like things to, you know, imagine that things should be. So here he says, David Hashem, it's Hashem. He said, I only derive my sense of the world and of truth from Hashem. And therefore, Ma'oz, Hashem is Ma'oz Chai, is the strength of my life. Who should I have any panic? Now, here he's referring to Goliath in the next pasuk. Bekarov al, he goes back and he looks back at this great, huge victory he had over Goliath. And it meant a lot. It wasn't just a victory over Goliath for David. It was something else. He says, Bekarov alai mereim lechol espesorai tzorai v'ayvai li. He said, when evil people approached me, came close to me to consume my flesh, to me I saw them as tzorai v'ayvai, afflictors, tormentors, enemies. But in Hashem's view, they were just mireyim, just evil people. So they had no power at all. I saw them as my enemies, out to defeat me. But Hashem, I knew that Hashem saw them as nothing. Nothing. Just evil people who therefore had no merit. Now, the reason this is referring to Goliath is because if you go back to Shmuel Aleph, Perek 17, and you read the story there, you see that it constantly refers to Goliath approaching closer and closer, becoming closer to David. The word karov appears a number of times, and he threatens David, I'll give your flesh, your carcass, to the birds to eat. So this is a reference to David. Now, what happens? David says, Hashem saw them as Mereim. So hey, makashlu v'nafalu. So they stumbled and they fell. With what? With a little pebble. Gurnish midgurnish. Now, here's the thing. Chazal bring down here. Okay, this is critical. That Chazal bring down that because David. Hold on, let me get you the exact thing here. Because David was free of sin. Okay? Because David was free of sin, that is why. Hold on 1 second. Here. 1 second. Where did I see? Here. 1 minute. I'm sorry. David, I forgot who said it, but I definitely saw it here. He said that because David HaMelech is free of sin, therefore, I think where Doc says it, therefore, he has no reason to be afraid of anybody else. Because he understood that at that time in his life, because his heart was filled with nothing but a desire to be attached to Hashem, and at that point in his life, he had no sin. He was pure, and he was confident. He was confident of his purity. He knew he hadn't sinned. He knew he had not yet miscalculated or, you know, nothing really had. He was a shepherd. Nothing really happened yet. And because he was free of sin, he went and faced Goliath with total security. He told Shaul, I don't need your armor and I don't need your weapons. He said to Goliath, you come with your threats and your threats and your weapons, and I come b'shem Hashem with nothing. That confidence came from his purity. And what he's seeking now is to regain that. He's not confident anymore. The rest of the capital, David expresses his fear. He's no longer confident at the end of his life that he has this unbroken chibur. Maybe he's tampered with it. Maybe he sinned to a degree that he weakened it and he can't fix it. Maybe he didn't do enough tshuva. Maybe he made mistakes. He's not sure anymore at the end of his life that the confidence he used to have can come to his rescue. And that's what he expresses in the end. So here he says, he was so full of confidence, he said, Im tachana alai machana, if they set up a camp against me, lo yira libi, my heart is not afraid, nothing. Im takum alai milchama, if they start a war against me, the whole war, nothing. Bezos ani batech, I was confident in this. This being his purity and his knowledge that he was free of sin and therefore he had nothing to fear, right? So, and we learned, in the Gemara, the nachash doesn't kill, it's the sin that kills, right? It's the sin that kills the person. It distances the person. So he says, acha sha'alti, now we do. That's what I once had. That's what I'm seeking. I just want to go back to that place where that's all I ever wanted and that's all I ever did. Then he says like this, this is the second half. Ki yitzbeneini besuko. When Hashem, the fact is that Hashem will yitzbeneini. Yitzbeneini comes from the word tzafun, which means hidden. He will hide me in his sukkah. Biomra yastireini, and on a difficult day he will conceal me in the hidden, this concealed part of his tent. Betsur yiromameini, on a rock he will raise me up high. What is David saying here? And then he asks, Va'ata, so now at the end of his life, he's saying, Yarum roshi al oivai, help me lift up my head against my enemies. Who are his enemies here? We have to be careful. All the enemies, sevivosai, that are surrounding me. Let me be able to sacrifice, to offer in your tent all of these, like the offerings of Trua. Trua is victory, so that I can sing and praise Hashem. He's saying that, he's saying here, and he goes on to develop this, that when he was confident, it was as if Hashem concealed him from all danger, as if there was like a magnetic shield around him. He was concealed. His enemies couldn't get him. He was hidden. in Hashem's presence, in Hashem's sukkah. And that was like, it was the same as being at the top of the mountain. He knew he was secure. His enemies were below him. That's what it was like. But now, at the end of his life, who knows? He made mistakes. He wasn't sure anymore. He's asking Hashem, raise up my head. Let me lift my head up. Let me feel strong and proud and stand against my enemies and come with a sense of victory that I succeeded. I made mistakes, but I did tshuva. So in the end, I did succeed. And then he says, Shema Hashem koli ekra. Listen, Hashem, my voice is calling out. Chaneni have rachamim. Chaneni means a matnas chinam. Free gift. Maybe it's something I don't deserve. But answer me as just a gesture of a free gift to me. Right? And he says, Lacha. On your behalf, in your stead, on your behalf, like for you, Amar Libi, my heart speaks. My heart is speaking for you. My heart is speaking on your behalf. My heart is conveying to me what you want. What is my heart telling me that you want, Hashem? Lecha, bishvilcha. Bishvilcha, Amar Libi. But for you, my heart is saying, Bakshu panai, seek me. I know what you want is that I should be a mevakesh Hashem. Remember what we said about that? Same word he used before. Always seeking something I lost. You want me to keep seeking, to keep trying to reestablish the chibur. And I do. Espanecha Hashem avakesh. And I do constantly seek your face. But again, he's not sure. Is he doing it pure, like in purity, like it used to be? Is he doing it with no other agendas, like it used to be? So he says, Al taster panecha mimeni. Don't hide your face from me. And what that means is mitfilasi, from my prayer. That's what Siparno says. Don't refuse to accept my tefillah. Va'al tat ba'af avdecha ezrasi hayisa. And don't become angry at your servant. You remember, you always helped me. And then he says, al titsheni. Now, what does al titsheni mean? Dessert, but in what way? Rav Hirsch brings down that titsheni is from al titosh. It is a particular nuance. Titosh means, he says here, to relinquish an object which one has held before. Don't let go. Don't let go because you're disappointed. Al titsheni, don't let go of the chibur, the attachment. Ba'al tazveni, and don't abandon me. Elokei yishi, you are my salvation. Ki i'avi v'imi azvuni, because my parents have abandoned me. Either they've died, or they abandoned me early on. And I always knew that. I lived in that place that the basic attachments that a person wants in life, David didn't have. He didn't really have. And not his children rebelled against him. His parents left him, all through his life. But he had one chibur, which was a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, Hashem yasfeini, Hashem will gather me in. And then he has a request. He says, Horeini Hashem darkecha, show me Hashem your ways, v'nacheini, and guide me, ibenachas, guide me ba'orach mishor, in the straight path, Laman Shorarai. Now this is tricky. Guide me in the straight path, he says, here. He says, instruct me in your ways and lead me in the straight path because of those who lie in wait for me. Now David starts talking about his enemies, but it's a particular kind of enemy. It's not those people who are going to make war against him. He's already vanquished all his enemies. It's a different kind of enemy here. The enemies David is talking about here, the ones who are his shorarai, the ones who lie in wait for him, are the people that say regarding David that he's not salvageable. He sinned in such a great way. He made so many mistakes. They're just waiting for him to become hopeless, to give up. The enemies that say that. They can all they have to do is twist the message, make David feel like a failure. And David says that he was almost lost because of their words. He almost believed it. He says here, He says, Al titneini benefesh tzarei. Do not let me, do not give me over to the nefesh. Nefesh is the word ratzon. Ratzon. Ratzon, like im yesh, ritzon, if, what did Avram says, Avram says in B'nei Ches, he uses the word nefesh. Im yesh nafshecha. Im yesh nafshecha, which, if it's your will. Don't hand me over to the will, what their ratzon of my oppressors are. Ki kamu bi eidei sheker v'yafei hachamas, because false witnesses are standing against me. That's what he's talking about. And they speak words of wrath. That they're, he's talking about all the people that conveyed him, his own, obviously if there was rebellion in his home, people were telling him, you failed, you don't deserve to be a king. You made too many mistakes. You're not a spiritual leader, and you're not a national leader, right? That's what people are telling him. And he doesn't want to believe them, and he's, maybe they're right. Maybe they're right. He did tshuva for everything. He tried to do what was right. He tried to always know what it was that Hashem wanted, but he almost lost himself. Rashi explains, I was almost lost, Rashi, and Radak says, I was almost lost because of their words. I almost believed them. Shani Rasha, that I'm a Rasha, the Ishtamim, and a bloodthirsty man, the Ein Li Chelek B'Hashem, and I have no real portion with Hashem. That's what they were telling me, and I almost believed them. And he says, so he says, Horeini Hashem Derkecha, show me your way, v'necheini, and let me walk down the straight path, leman shorarai, even if it's just to prove them wrong, let me at least, for the rest of my life, do what's right. Do what I just asked for. Let me go to the Beis Hamikdash, learn your Torah, dwell in the house of Hashem, if just to prove them wrong. And don't let me fall prey to their ideas, to their, to not only their Lashon Hara, but their very destructive ideas that can destroy me. And then he says, Lule, and that's Ella, Lule Hamanti. All I want to do is have emunah, trust, reliance, really. Reliance. What do I rely in? And this is what he says, Liros betuv Hashem be'eretz chayim. Now, there's a big machlokus here. Hirsch brings down, it's got to be, it seems much more likely that Eretz Chaim is this world, the land of the living, as opposed to the next world. David is saying, I want to rely that I will be able to see that everything I went through and everything Hashem thrust upon me and all the different avenues I had to go down, all the different trials and tribulations and the ups and the downs and whatever, everything that came with it, it was all Tuv Hashem, was all the goodness of Hashem, and I want to see it in this world. Going back a little bit, when David says, Lachsos benoam Hashem, Chazal say here to get a vision of the pleasantness of Hashem, they say here, Chazal bring down, I'll tell you who, he says that, hold on, Lachsos benoam Hashem, he says, I want to get a glimpse in this world of how everything that Hashem did for me is ne'imas. I want to get the insight, the understanding of the ne'imas, the pleasantness of Hashem that I'm enduring here. And hold on, let me just see. A minute. Here, David said he was referring to the Drachei Darchei Noam, the ways of Hashem are pleasant. Noam Hashem is the glorious way in which Hashem shapes human affairs on earth in accordance with his purposes. And that's what David wanted to see. He wanted to see that, everything that he went through. And so Chazal say here also, so he should not complain, so that he should not complain against Hashem. And he asks, and he says in the end, Lule Hamanti, what he's Elul, that's the, and that's what we all want. We just want to be able to get a glimpse. That be, and the only way you get a glimpse of this is maintain, and even if you don't get a glimpse of this, the only solution is to maintain a chibur, knowing that everything Hashem does is Tov Hashem, and to be able, the gift is to get a glimpse of that here, so that we have the confidence and the strength to go forward. And that's how he ends. And he says, Kaveh el Hashem. Just put your trust, your hope in Hashem, your tikva, that it's all good. And maintain a chibur. And then, when you do that, and you pray, and sometimes you get a glimpse, and sometimes you don't, and sometimes you feel like your tefillos are answered, and sometimes you don't. Don't become disheartened. Chazek va'ametz libecha, strengthen yourself. Be determined and courageous to go forward, and strengthen your heart. V'kavei el Hashem, and just, and again, go and trust. And David HaMelech is saying here, let's put it together. He's saying that I'm not sure. What, you know, I went through so much in my life, and I don't even know if I still can. You know, I'm trying to recapture that purity. But my enemies, everybody tells me I've lost it for good. I've made too many mistakes. They speak with fury against me. They're Eidei Sheker, he calls them, but they're false witnesses. They're lying. I know there's no such thing as losing it for good, despite everything. And I just want to keep myself strong and confident, like I used to be, that I will see the Tov Hashem, that everything is good. And how do I keep myself strong? I just keep turning back to Hashem, because my heart tells me that what you want, what you ask of humanity is, as he said, lib lecha, for your sake. Amar Libi, my heart says, Bakshu Panai, I know that's what you want. So as long as I'm doing that, I know that they're all false, they're liars. That's not true. He can't lose hope in himself. David here, in LaDavid Hashem Ori, David doesn't want to lose hope in himself. And that's the same type of urgent emotion that we all start to feel, Elo Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because last Rosh Hashanah and last Yom Kippur, we were confident and we were so sure that now it's going to change. And now we're really going to get a grip on this bad midah or that mitzvah that we're slacking or this behavior. And then what happens? And we get to lose. Eventually we get old. We get cynical about ourselves. We are our own false witnesses, our own enemies. We think, is there really any hope? Can I really, you know, reestablish that chibur? And we all felt that times in everyone's life where they really feel that sense of this. I just want to do what's right now. I just want to keep myself on track. And that's what Dove is saying. He doesn't want to lose hope in himself. He wants us to know that there's no such thing as losing hope in yourself. That you keep having to re-strengthen yourself, and to hold on to the pure core which exists inside everyone. That what they really, really want, despite everything in the world that is conspiring to distract them from that goal, is a chibur. And if they hold on to it, so David HaMelech, who therefore bears the seeds of Mashiach, will ensure through his words that he's strengthening us, giving us chizuk, that we will get the courage, the chizuk that he himself always managed to find to go further.
A very positive point about Israel.
Yes, question, yeah. You're drachen. You're me, this one. So let me just go in your way. Act like you. In other words, just be an example. Be the right example. Yeah.
Hashem didn't even give Moshe a glimpse.
Not a glimpse.